It's Celtics coverage on CLNSRadio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh,
that's
Hayward.
What I'm talking about.
Horford lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free 347-215-7771.
Hello and welcome to the CLNS Media Celtics postgame show. I'm your host, Taylor McLeod. My co-host, Andrew Bino, will be joining us later on. But before we get to tonight's tough loss in Houston, I want to tell you guys about SeatGeek. For years now, buying tickets to sports and concerts has been complicated and confusing, but we found a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest and easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. Personally, I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. Andrew has the SeatGeek app on his phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, you know, literally anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. Actually, I'm going home for spring break in 2 weeks, and I just used SeatGeek to buy a couple tickets to Celtics Wizards at the Garden, so, you know, SeatGeek's real easy to use. It's designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats to fit your budget. Plus, every ticket is fully guaranteed. You can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals in every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, listeners to the CLNS Media Celtics postgame show get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code GARDENREPORT today. That's promo code GARDENREPORT for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Bino, can you hear me?
Speak up a little bit, dude. I can't hear you well.
How about now?
Yeah, I mean you're a little quiet. I don't know what's up with it. I mean, it might just be on my end, but either way, just kind of speak as loud as you can, and we'll do the best we can with this.
All right. Well, like Beano's and I connection to this software. Celtics game tonight was a tough one. You know, they lost to the Rockets. Big games, ABC Saturday Night Primetime. They lost 103-120. They led for most of the game. Their bench put up 67 of their 120 points. Marcus Morris, Greg Monroe were huge for them throughout the entire game. Kyrie had a good fourth quarter, missed a couple free throws to end the game. All in all, it was a good game, tough one to lose, but the Rockets have the best winning percentage in the NBA. They're the number one seed in the Western Conference. They're a title contender. They have the potential MVP on their team. Always tough to lose, always hate to see the Celtics lose, but when it's at the hands of a team like this, it doesn't feel as bad. Bino, what do you think of this one?
I mean, look, I think that there's – as tough as it is to lose a game like this, Taylor, because it was so exciting. It was a nationally televised game on a Saturday night. It was a huge game for the Celtics, and the idea that they're trying to prove to everybody that they're not the same team that finished the All-Star break. They're the team that's been playing very well since the post-All-Star break. So they come into this one, their first real test post-All-Star break. And, Taylor, they look great. I know they lost, but – you have so many different contributions across the board. You have 7 Celtics in double figures. It was really quite impressive the way that they played tonight overall. I mean, you look at the way Marcus Morris played. He was unconscious, absolutely draining every three-pointer essentially he took was 5 for 7 from three-point land. And the way Greg Monroe flawlessly contributed tonight, 18 points, 6 rebounds, really looking like the Greg Monroe that people thought could potentially contribute to the Celtics team. So, look, we'll get to all the negatives and kind of the late game stuff in just a sec, Taylor, but overall, a lot to be excited about if you're a Celtics fan.
Absolutely, absolutely. The only complaints, real complaints I have in this game are Jaylen Brown only put up 9 pounds. He got He only put up 9 points, and he got into foul trouble early. And Al Horford, after four quiet games, I thought maybe it was just, you know, everything else is clicking. Al was taking a step back, getting a little more rest after the All-Star break, but he didn't play well tonight. Shot 4 for 12, missed a couple layups, you know, down the stretch. You know, had a tough stretch laying on the floor, and other guys were calling timeouts for him. He never called a timeout, kind of threw the ball out from the floor onto James Harden. And, you know, if you watch the game, you know how it went. It was tough. Real toughy. So he shot 4 for 12, you know, only 10 points. And that's not the Al Horford we need in big games like this. It was a close game, 120-320, like I said. Three-point game against arguably the best team in the NBA, but you can't have one of your three best players, you know, playing like that on national TV. Obviously, I'm not worried. I don't think he's average. I think he's an incredible player. I think he's a consistent player. But games like tonight, you know, it just makes you scratch your head a little bit, because this guy who's always so collected, so calm, so cool, and he makes a couple mistakes down the stretch, a couple big mistakes after you've seen him play so well in crunch time throughout this entire season. It's tough to see. You know, maybe it's something about Houston. He missed a game-winning layup down there last year. Maybe it's just something in the Houston air that gets to him. You know, I'm not too worried about it. Not too worried about this game. Not too worried about this loss in the grand scheme of things. It's tough, like I said, but it is what it is. You know, what do you think of Horford tonight?
Yeah, you know, something was off, like you said. I mean, he produced enough when it comes to his boards. He had six, and four of them were offensive, so you can't knock him for that. But the efficiency clearly wasn't there for the 4 for 12. I didn't love at the end of the game, Taylor, how Brad Stevens called a set play for him to shoot a three-pointer. I mean, he wasn't on at all. There were so many other guys that were hot tonight, and you have Horford of all guys shooting a set three-pointer off of an out-of-bounds play. I mean, look, I think there was a lot of other guys that you could have called that for tonight, and I get it. You're going to roll with Horford no matter what, because he is one of the leaders of the team, and obviously overall he's one of the best players on the team. But it was a little frustrating tonight having Brad go to him late. I think Horford was clearly off, but it was exciting seeing Greg Monroe put up that 18 points and 6 rebounds tonight, including 2 really nice blocks, and he was plus 23 for the game. He had the highest plus-minus on the whole Celtics roster. So, I mean, where Horford kind of lacked, Monroe obviously picked up the Celtics big time tonight. So that's kind of my thoughts overall on Horford, but was definitely kind of annoyed with the calls at the end by Stevens to go with a set shot by Horford, and then also for Horford not to call a timeout when he kind of gets knocked down. What did you make of the whole situation with him on the ground, Taylor?
I thought it was strange, because I thought the whole, you know, the last 5 minutes of the game were chaotic. They were all over the place. The ball was flying around. The Celtics were making shots. The Rockets were making shots. Eric Gordon was battling out with Greg Monroe and Marcus Morris. But Horford drove for that layup, put it off the glass, grabbed his own rebound, fell down into a scrum of Rockets. I saw the replay. Brad Stevens is sprinting down the sideline. I'm assuming he's calling timeout. You can't really see his hands in this shot I saw. You know, Marcus Morris is calling timeout. Marcus Smart is calling timeout. And Al just kind of rolls over and throws the ball to nobody. You know, maybe there should have been someone there. Maybe he was expecting his teammate to be there. But it looked like he just rolled over and threw the ball to nobody. Harden ended up with it. The Rockets went down and scored. It looked really bad. Like, I'm not going to lie. It looked really bad, and it was really disappointing to see Al mess up like that. Whether it's his fault or not, it was disappointing. It was disappointing. That's what I have to say. It was just disappointing.
Yeah, and you know what? It wasn't the Horford that we're used to. Also, Taylor, one thing I want to talk about as we kind of analyze this this late game, this last 5 minutes of this Celtics-Rockets game, 123-120 Houston win. I didn't love that Jaylen Brown didn't get a ton of crunch time minutes. And Jaylen Brown, Taylor, came out firing tonight. He was 3 for 3 to start this game, a really nice dribble drive to get things going early on for the Celtics. He had a pull-up jumper, and he had a three-pointer. And then it feels like Brad Stevens, for no reason, kind of went away from him. Look, I know that Terry Rozier played really well tonight, and I'm not saying that he didn't. And I'm not saying that Marcus Smart, matchup-wise, isn't a great matchup on Harden. But for Brown to only play 24 minutes, and especially in that first half, he could have played a little bit more. And just overall, I feel like that Brown played really consistent, and overall, he played really well. I was just kind of frustrated that Jaylen Brown didn't get those developmental minutes, because you assume going forward that Jaylen Brown's going to be here for the long haul, and you want Jaylen Brown to get these kind of playoff experience minutes, because that's an intense game tonight, playoff-like atmosphere, and Jaylen Brown wasn't on the court toward the end of the game.
I agree. Jaylen Brown, to me, I wrote a couple days ago on just my own website that Jaylen Brown is slowly developing into what looks like, you know, possibly could be one of the best wings in the Eastern Conference. And it happens game in and game out where he has these hot first quarters, hot first halves, and then disappears. But it's not like some players who disappear, you know, they stop producing, but they're still on the floor. He gets benched. Brad takes him out, whether it's, you know, for 5 minutes, he plays 5 minutes less than he normally does, or tonight he only played 23 minutes, which is, I believe, like 15 or 16 less than his normal, you know, around 30. And I get that he had four fouls, and I get that he had a bad technical. And like you said, I understand that Marcus Morris was playing phenomenally at forward. Marcus Smart's probably a better matchup for Harden. But when you're in these games, stepping back again, I get it. You're going to ride your hot hand. That's what you do in a game like this. You ride the hot hand. But it feels to me that in a game like this, you want your five best players on the floor at some point. And Jaylen did get a couple minutes in the fourth, but it feels to me like you want your best five players on the court, and sometimes it just doesn't feel like we have our five best players on the floor.
Yeah, and you know what? With that, too, I feel like that at the end of the game, right, you have Smart playing the role of Jaylen Brown, in my opinion, the way that Smart was kind of playing out there. And the very end, Taylor, with around 2 minutes to go, you have Kyrie trying to go up for that layup when he blew past Harden. It didn't go like kind of crazy. That was kind of a bad omen for the rest of the game. But then Kyrie comes back down, right? Ariza's on him. Ariza's a long defender, and you have Kyrie trying to get by him. Marcus Smart sets a pick, and he rolls off it. Kyrie hits him. Marcus Smart takes a jump shot a little bit early on in the shot clock in a jumper that, yes, it might be within the offense, Taylor, but that's not the shot I want from a Celtics player with 2 minutes to go in that tight of a game and that intense of a game with Marcus Smart shooting a mid-range jump shot. If Jaylen Brown was in the game, or if you have Tatum doing that, that's way different than having Marcus Smart do that, Taylor.
Right, and I agree. At the same time, though, it's really hard to say that Marcus Smart shouldn't be on the floor in crunch time. We've seen what he can do in crunch time, you know, in other games, but specifically against the Rockets, you know, on December 28th when he drew two offensive fouls on Harden, sealing the game for the Celtics. So it's hard to say that Smart shouldn't be on the floor, and I think he should be on the floor. I would have liked to see Jaylen on the floor more in the fourth. That's what it is. Whether it worked, you know, it might not have worked out position-wise, and that's fine. But when it comes down to it, I would have liked to have seen Jaylen on the floor in the fourth more than he was. You know, it's disappointing for me to see that, and it's been disappointing for me for the last month and a half, because as the media and the fans keep saying, like, Jaylen Brown's in the midst of his quote-unquote jump, he's making that leap, it seems more and more often, or maybe, you know, it's consistently throughout the entire season, he ends up getting taken out at not the worst possible time, but at an inopportune time, or a time where he could really develop and become that wing that we want him to become.
Yes, and that's, we're on the same page with that, Taylor, and I honestly had no idea that you were kind of in the same boat as me, is give Jaylen Brown those minutes that he quite frankly deserves, because he's a young stud who the Celtics drafted high, who's been shown great development. Let him out there, let him play. And look, Taylor, if Jaylen Brown had like an obnoxious technical where it was like, wow, Jaylen, like, you're a hothead, and it was like a Grayson Allen type like hothead move, or some guy who has a reputation of doing that, then okay, prove the point, take him out, bench him, yell at him, and treat him like a college kid, Brad Stevens. But Marcus Morris and yourself, Brad Stevens, also got technicals in that crazy third quarter that was like a playoff game. So don't tell me that Jaylen Brown, because he got a technical, is the reason he only played 24 minutes tonight. And that's what bothered me.
Yeah, I fully agree. But you can't pin this on any one person. You can't pin it on Brad. You can't pin it on Jaylen. You can't pin it on anyone. I mean, if you look at the numbers, the Celtics, they shot 48.4% from the field, which is good, 54.2% from three, which, again, is good. But they committed more turnovers than the Rockets. They were out-rebounded by the Rockets. You know, they had two less assists. They had 24-22. And then if you really look at it, like the fast break points, the Rockets seem to be in transition for so many times tonight, you know, getting easy layups, leaking out, and getting, like, easy buckets. They had 20 points on the fast break, and the Celtics had two. So you look at that, and you can look at it two ways. One, the number two seed in the Eastern Conference, who has maybe not legitimate title hopes, but certainly title hopes, to say the least. You can't have a discrepancy like that. But at the same time, you look at the final score, 123-120, and you're playing against one of the most high-powered teams in the NBA, losing by 3 points while still having that fast break point discrepancy. It looks good. you know, you overcame that weakness in your game, and they looked awesome on offense tonight. Like, awesome, awesome. Probably their best offensive performance all night against a good team. You know, they put up 134 against Charlotte a couple nights ago, and that looks great. But tonight they're playing against a legitimate title contender, you know, a team that has hopes of taking down the Warriors in the West. And they still put up 120 points, and they ran crisp offensive stats and got everyone involved. Like you said, they had, I think, seven guys in double digits. So you have to look at both sides of the coin.
Yeah, and with that, this is the thing, Taylor, is that I'm optimistic about this team, obviously, but the thing that was kind of why, like, I don't even know how to describe it. I guess the most surprising thing to me is that the Celtics actually started off the game playing to Houston's tempo. That first quarter was back and forth, a lot of shots, everybody shooting a high percentage. Then the game kind of calmed down, and it was really felt like more of a Celtics kind of game where all these guys were within the offense. You had all types of scores, whether it be Marcus Morris hitting shots, Greg Monroe down low, Marcus Smart once in a while actually hitting a shot within the offense. Obviously, Terry Rozier playing incredibly well, hitting going 3-for-3 from three-point land. All these guys were playing, especially off the bench, were playing within the offense, Taylor, and it felt like it slowed down. So it was one of those things that I was proud to see, and I was happy to see the Celtics playing their own tempo against a Rockets team that likes to go fast. It's Mike D'Antoni. He wants to go fast. He wants to go out and run and gun and shoot as many threes as they can. It felt like the Celtics kind of thwarted that for a little bit, and then at the very end, I guess you could say, with about 6 minutes to go in the fourth, it kind of became Houston's game again, and that's why they pulled away. But I was very happy to see the Celtics start the game kind of – obviously, I wasn't happy to see them start the game playing at the Rockets' tempo, but I was really happy to see them adjust, adapt. Be like, okay, we're the Celtics. We actually have some old heads on this team with the Horfords and the Kyries who have a lot of postseason experience and kind of these intense game experience. Let's slow this down. Let's play our game. And in the last 6 minutes, it got away from them. But you can't really fault them because there's a lot of young guys on this team. A lot of new guys are incorporating, like Monroe, and they also have Smart coming back from injury. So there's a lot to be excited about if you're a Celtics fan, considering that this is maybe the most powerful offense in the league that plays so fast, and they really didn't let the Rockets control the tempo too much, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I think that's a great point you bring up, that the Celtics really played their game at their pace for, you know, 40 to 42 minutes of this game. When you look at the stats, Marcus Morris led the team with 21 points and Greg Monroe poured in 18. So you're looking at a 6'8 isolation heavy forward leading the team in scoring and then a standard back to the basket big man with the second most points on the team. You're going to slow the game down when you do that. And that's how you have to beat these teams like the Rockets and the Warriors. You can't try to play their game. Even though the Celtics did shoot really well from three tonight, you can't try to outgun them. That just won't work. You have to slow things down and play your style of basketball. Obviously, you can't call tonight a good defensive effort, but, you know, allowing 123 points to Houston feels, you know, like a nightly thing for any team who faces them. They're that good. They shoot almost 53s a game. So that's just going to happen. But, yeah, I really like that point that you made just about the Celtics slowing things down and playing their brand of basketball, because that's what they're going to have to do if they want to have real title hopes. If these title hopes that they have are legitimate, they need to play their brand of basketball and not someone else's.
Well, and you know what? And with that, Taylor, you know what's really exciting? Kyrie had an off night in the idea that he was 6-for-17, only scored 18 points, and Al Horford potentially had, I saw a CLNS media member Bobby Manning retweet somebody that said, this is arguably, or maybe Bobby said it himself, this is arguably one of the worst performances Horford had in his Celtics tenure. I really think that the fact that the Celtics slowed it down, played very well in a game where Horford and Irving, your two best players, in my opinion, don't really max out their performance. They didn't really show up as much as you would like. And this is the result, a three-point loss where they almost had it at the end. That should make every Celtics fan optimistic, Taylor, about this team's chances just moving forward and playing these top teams in the East.
For sure. For sure. And you and I probably sound like huge green teamers, not reality-based right now, looking at so many positives from this game. But I think you're absolutely right. There's so much from this game that you can look at in a Celtics positive perspective. Like, my favorite types of games, and I've said it on this show all season long, are when the scoring is distributed throughout the team. Obviously, I love it when Kyrie goes for 30 or 40, and I love it when, you know, Terry Rozier had 30 a couple weeks ago. That stuff obviously excites me, but when the scoring is distributed where, you know, Morris has 21, Monroe has 18, Kyrie has 18, Rozier has 17, you know, it's keep spread out. It's, I feel better about the team as a whole and not just about the top. And another thing, if you, Tice didn't play tonight. You know, he was injured, but he's been playing so well lately, and he didn't play tonight, and that gave Greg Monroe the minutes that he got, and he capitalized on them. So there's positives to be taken from this game, even though it's a loss, even though it's a tough loss on national TV.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and this is the other thing, too, Taylor, with that. It's not like Monroe played 30-plus minutes to do this. He had 18 points and 6 boards and 2 blocks in 19 minutes. Like, if that's not efficiency, I don't know what is. And this is the other thing, too. People listening to this might be like, wow, Taylor and Rubino expect the Celtics to have, I think they were saying it was 59 bench points. I'm going to check the math in a second. Or, Taylor, you can check the math for me, so I'm not saying any fake news on here. But I'm pretty sure it's 59 bench points for the Celtics. I don't expect the Celtics to have an incredible performance from their bench like that every night. But if you're telling me that if in a game where maybe Kyrie and Horford play better, but these guys are still contributing offensively and have the firepower between – say Morris is hot one night in the playoffs, or Rozier has that 17-point performance, and you get just a solid 11 points and 5 assists and 6 boards from Marcus Smart. Like, that's what I like to see. It's not going to be all 4 of the major bench guys plus maybe, say, Tice doing that well every single game, Taylor. But if you can get 1, maybe 2 of them playing well, and you get Kyrie and Horford to play normally, which they obviously are going to, moving forward into the playoffs, whatever you want to call it, that's what makes a Celtics fan excited, is that the bench stepped up tonight. You're not going to need them to step up that much every night, but if that's what they could do potentially, that's so exciting, because you only have Horford and Kyrie combined for 28 points tonight.
Right, right. And even though down the stretch I kind of got sick of Horford's poor play, I know it's not going to continue. I know he'll turn it around, even though he's had a 5-game skid. He's a consummate professional. He's had a, you know, 10-year career, he's fine. He'll turn it around. But you know what I'm also sick of, Vino?
Let me hear. LeBron? No, I'm just kidding.
Bad stuff. No, I love LeBron, but bad stuff. Bad food. Bad, you know, food companies who tell you they're giving you one thing and giving you another, or they're using all these scientific terms and their ingredients. I hate that. You know what I do like? RX bars. RX bars are a whole food protein bar. What does that mean? Their bars are made with 100% whole ingredients. They want to be transparent and upfront with our customers, which is why they label the core ingredients, you know, egg whites, dates, and nuts, on the front of the package, and the ingredients that make up texture and taste on the back. 100% real cacao, coconut, and, you know, all the other stuff. Beyond being a go-to snack that checks off a number of nutritional boxes, RX bars actually taste delicious. We found creating a bar from real whole ingredients actually tastes better than anything out there. We don't need the fillers, the additives, the chemicals, or the added sugar. Yep. You know, you want to know how X-Bar started? RX bars?
Let me hear.
In 2013, they called BS on protein bars. You know, all those other protein bars that you see on TV or in the gym or in the gas station, you know, yuck. You don't want that. You want RX bars. You want, because they're whole. Like I was saying, they're whole. And you can't find a bar that isn't full of artificial ingredients, fillers, and preservatives, and just general BS, and that's why they set up to create a bar with a few simple, clean ingredients where every ingredient serves a purpose. You know, RX bars' core ingredients do all the talking. It's like eating, you know, 3 eggs, 6 dates, and 6 almonds. And it turns out the real ingredients actually taste good. In these bars, you can actually taste the real ingredients, like the cacao and the fruits and the spices. And whether you like sweet or savory, you know, chocolate or fruit flavors, there's an RX bar for you. They come in 18 different flavor varieties, and they're gluten-free, soy-free, or dairy-free, so if you have any, you know, allergies, you're fine. You can still eat RX bars. And there's no added sugar, no artificial colors, artificial flavors, preservatives, or fillers. And like I said, they use real egg whites for protein. Real egg whites. Not fake egg whites. Real egg whites. And, you know, my co-host, Papa Rubino, eats RX bars at the gym. I go to the gym often, too. My favorite RX bar to eat is the peanut butter chocolate. I'm a big Reese's guy, so peanut butter chocolate is my favorite. So, you know, if you want to check those flavors out, Bino, what's your favorite flavor?
I like the peanut butter one, too. And, Taylor, we're big gym guys, and shout out Mr. Bino, the Father Bino, to me. He loves these bars, too. So, great bars all around. Hopefully everybody in the CLNS listeners go get their RX bars.
Absolutely. So, if you want some RX bars, visit rxbar.com. And pick up your first order today, all right? And the reason I bring up RX Bar is that RX Bar is actually sponsoring our caller, our call line tonight. So to begin our call line, 862, what do you have for us?
This is Isaiah. What's going on, fellas? This is Isaiah from Jersey.
What's
up, Isaiah?
What's up,
man?
Long time no talk.
Yeah, I know, fellas. What's going on, Taylor? What's going on?
How are you?
I'm all right. You know, trying to gather my thoughts after this Celtic loss. And I don't know. The last couple of times I've been calling, it seems like all of my calls are centered around Al and his play. And
a big anti-Al guy, Isaiah.
I'm not an anti-Al guy. I'm an anti-Al making $27 million guy. Now, I can't do anything about the amount of money he's making, but I just feel like for the amount of buck that we're paying him, we're not getting what we need. Now, I've been told that when Hayward comes back, Al's going to shift back to his natural position as third all-star on the team. But in the meanwhile, this is where you should be earning all of that money and upping your game in order to compensate for what the team is missing. Now, everyone says that Al is this super glue guy, and I agree with them. He's super important to the team, and we do need him the way the team is constituted. He passes, he rebounds somewhat, and he plays great defense. That's what I can't take away from him. But to me, it just seems like Al is more or less an unwilling scorer and a jump shooter, and he doesn't necessarily give us everything we need. He gives us some of what we need. And if Al were to up his game in any way, I think that the Celtics will be a real threat as constituted for the title. But being that I don't think he's a $27 million player, I don't think that we can actually go past the finals if we get to the finals, especially with the way Al's been playing lately. He's just been going backwards to me as the season gets later in the year.
Isaiah, do you think this five-game skid that Al Horford is on is going to continue, or do you think he snaps out of it and kind of becomes what we saw in the first half of the season or before the break?
Well, I kind of think that it is what it is, because Al's an older ball player. And at some point, these guys start to, you know, reach the top of the mountain and start going backwards. My worry is that we're getting Al at $27 million while he's on the back nine, you know, and it's going to be, what, $29 million next year? What are we going to be looking at next year and moving forward? That's my problem with Al. It's not like Al hasn't had a really good career. It's not like he hasn't established himself as one of the core Celtics. But my problem is moving forward, what are we going to be getting out of Al, and how much longer are we going to be paying for the fact that he has to come to our team in order to get other players to come and use his clout in order to for the Celtics' good? But how much longer are we going to have to pay for that and not get the production? Because he's making $27 million, and he's only averaging, what, 13 points a game, 6 or 7 rebounds a game. I mean, there's no one else out there who's averaging at least 20 that has those kind of stats.
Yeah.
I agree. Isaiah, he's the outlier, Isaiah. Like, everybody knew, like Isaiah, his career high points average was 18.6 in the 13-14 season for Atlanta, and he only played 29 games because he got hurt. So it's one of those things, Isaiah, that, like, and then the next two seasons with Atlanta before he came to Boston, he averaged 15.2 both seasons. So it's not like the Celtics were going after him because he was going to produce – like some crazy offensive numbers. It's not like he is some guy out there like a Dwight Howard when he was young that they were bringing in because, oh my God, he's going to get you 20 and 10 every night like a young Dwight Howard used to do. They got him because they wanted an anchor of the defense, that he was a very legit anchor of an offensive system that Brad Stevens wants, where it's a big guy that's facilitating as well as getting some buckets once in a while. I mean, Isaiah, look, hopefully he snaps out of it, and I understand your kind of annoyance at him not playing well lately, but it's not like overall his stats are going down that much. I mean, he's averaging a point less per game, and he's actually increased almost by a rebound from this season to last season. So I think that it's more about the money for you, Isaiah, and I get the money kind of annoyance as well that he's an expensive piece, but like Joe Sway said last time when you called in, I did a show with him, Joe Sway's right. Joe Sway Pavone, who's the CLNS media member, he always says that you needed to get Al Horford to start the domino, being able to get Gordon Hayward, to get Kyrie to be happy here. And that's kind of how it goes, and you're going to always have to overpay one guy.
No, I completely understand what you guys are saying. And there's no one else out there that I would rather have than two other guys in the entire league that I would rather have without. So as much as I'm saying my frustrations with him, I understand what he means to the team. It's just moving forward. And maybe it's even at least for this year. If we're going to take another step in order to really compete and win these games in the playoffs, you can't have Al shooting as many shots as he does. He's got to put one, be at least willing to put the ball up. At some games, he looks like he's not even willing to take the shot. At some point, Al has to take more shots. Whether he makes them or doesn't make them, that's one thing. But to me, it seems like he's just willing to drift. And for the amount of money, and I understand what you guys are saying, as we needed him, he's a domino that we needed. All I'm saying is, at a certain point for this team to take another step, that other guy that's being paid like a megastar needs to take more shots and more ownership of the offense and have it come through him at certain times and not just from the high post.
I agree. And like Bino said, I think the money makes it hard to judge Al Horford correctly, because you look at the stats, and like you said, he's averaging 12.8 points a game, and obviously buckets aren't everything. You're contrary to what Bill Russell said.
Yeah, but that's $27 million for 12.8.
Exactly. I agree.
There's no way around that.
Right.
And there was times in the season when people were frustrated with how the team was playing, and they pointed at different players on the team. They said, oh, Marcus, he's the bane of our existence. Let's get rid of him. He can't shoot. He doesn't take the right shot. Oh, Terry's not consistent. He's not this. He's not that. Oh, Marcus Morris, he's a selfish ball player. He takes certain shots when he shouldn't. But really, to me, everyone else is the role player, and Al is that guy that actually needs to suck up some of the slippage of everyone else, and he doesn't do that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, in the last five games, what have you thought of Smart? We got a couple more callers if you just want to, you know, just give us your quick thoughts on how Smart's played the last five games since the All-Star break, but what have you thought about him?
Well, you guys know I love Marcus all the time. No matter what he does on offense, I don't care. Marcus is a special player, and he's shown that. Like, he gets a – like, people don't even understand how Marcus's ticky-tack fouls gets the other team into the bonus quicker. Like, they don't understand the value of a guy like Marcus that just gets you one or two extra fouls per quarter in order for you to get to the bonus quicker, especially in games like tonight, where it's ticky-tack and it's neck and neck, and you just get those little extra things that Marcus gives you that don't show up in the box score but show up on the scoreboard when he's taking two free throws because he's boxing out Clint Capela. Like, Marcus is my guy. I think he's the heartbeat of the team. I think that he's the other playmaker on the entire team. And you guys are talking about Jaylen Brown. I don't see how you guys can get on Brad for not having Jaylen Brown on the court, because Jaylen, throughout the season, is locked in some plays, and sometimes he loses his man on defense. He becomes an island to himself, and he doesn't flow with the rest of the defenders on the court. He doesn't seem like he's locked in all the time. And to me, Brad has his pulse on when Jaylen is locked in and when he's going to play and when he's going to take him out. And lately he's been doing the same thing with Tatum. These guys are young. They're going to take a while to really understand what it's like to compete for the entire game and know when to take breaks and not. And I think right now he has more confidence and more faith defensively and offensively with Terry, Marcus, and even with Kyrie when he went with the three-guard rotation. So I think Brown has to show more consistency and to be locked in more when he's on the court, especially on the defensive end. And we all know that Brad isn't going to pull you for the offense. When he pulls you, it's because he has a defensive problem with you. And I think Brown just has lapses.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Well, Isaiah, we got to get to some other callers, but hey, thanks for calling in. Hope to talk to you next time I'm on.
All right, fellas. Have a good one, and as usual, go green.
Of course. Thanks, Isaiah.
All right. Bino and I are going to head back to the RX Bar Celtics call hotline.
954, what do you have for us?
No, you know what? 954 left. He literally just left. 954, if you're there, call back in, man. We'd love to talk to you. 413, you want? We're going to put you on. 413.
Just listening. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, but you know, it's hard.
Wait,
with
hold on.
Jaren.
Hey, Taylor, 862 is back. Hold on. We want to talk to 862?
Absolutely.
862, what do you got, man?
I'm still
Hello?
On the line. It's still Isaiah from Jersey.
Oh, my bad, Isaiah. Sorry. All right, Taylor, we're just gonna go us two, Taylor, until we get some newbies.
Perfect. So, you know, to expand on what Isaiah said, I think he makes a really good point about Brad and Jalen. And maybe you and I have our fan goggles on a little too much. And being almost the same age as Jalen, you know, you and I are 19, 20 years old. He's only 21. He was drafted. You know, he's a rookie or a freshman year in college. Maybe there's that connection to you and I have, you know, fan goggles on with when it comes to Jalen. But, you know, they showed a couple clips of him mic'd up tonight on defense, and it seemed like he was locked in, you know, telling Kyrie to stay on a certain screen and telling Smart to get through on certain screens. And as I mentioned earlier, for the past month and a half, it's really felt like Jalen's been in the midst of his jump or his leap to becoming that next-tier player. So even though I definitely you see where Isaiah's coming from and agree, you know, with part of his sentiment, it's really hard for me. Even though he has four fouls, even though he got that bad tech, it's just hard for me to see so many of these games come down to crunch time and he's not on the floor. As I said, as we both said, Terry Rozier is awesome in crunch time. Marcus Smart's awesome in crunch time. Marcus Morris was hot tonight. And so maybe tonight that's the time not to put Jalen on the floor, but it's something I've been noticing for the entire season is that he gets hot on offense. He looks like he's, you know, really dominating from that small forward position, then he's just gone. And it's tough to see, and it's frustrating to see over and over again. So when it happens again on nights like tonight, it's just, you know, like I said a million times tonight, it's disappointing and frustrating.
Yeah, no, it is, Taylor, but this is the other thing, too. And I'm not going to create the narrative, and I'm not going to change the narrative to talking about all about the future when it comes to the Celtics basketball team. But can you hear me good, Taylor, or no?
Absolutely, yep, you're clear.
Okay, good. So, just as I was saying, this is the thing. With Jaylen Brown, he has reached, what, 50, 55% of his max, of his ceiling, of what he could be as a great – I think he could be an all-time Celtics player. Just the way his body is, his athleticism, he plays great D. His offense, I mean, from this time last year to this time this year, Taylor, are you kidding me? That move he put on the Rockets defense at the very beginning of the game, the way he went 3-for-3 from the field in the very beginning of the game with a jumper and a three after that nice layup. He looks so good. To me, Taylor, it's confusing that you don't know what's going to happen with Smart this summer because he's a restricted free agent. Terry Rozier only has 1 year after the end of this year. And Jaylen Brown seems like he's a huge piece of the future. So I understand having to play the best guys, but isn't there also a point, Taylor, where it's a huge game like this and you have to roll with Jaylen and see what he gives you? Because maybe if Jaylen doesn't have that little oomph at the end of a game, he doesn't have the kind of the guts at the end of the game. He doesn't have the crunch time guts. Maybe you ship Jaylen Brown at this time next year when his value is still high. But you need to at least find out and not just keep playing Terry and Marcus in every single crunch time moment because you want to go with them. It's never going to develop Jaylen Brown, and it's never going to develop the future of this team. Because what if in 2 years from now, neither Marcus Smart or Terry Rozier is here, and you have Jaylen Brown as a fourth-year guy playing his first crunch time consistent all the time?
Yeah, and I think that raises another good point that the Celtics are playing with a double-edged sword right now because on one hand, they have legitimate title hopes. And, like, you see how they play against a team like the Rockets tonight, and you've seen how they've played against the Warriors twice, and you've seen how they're playing against the Cavs, and they're 1-1 against Toronto, and they're 1-1 against Washington. So, obviously, their aspirations should be high. They should be high. They're a very talented team. They have one of the better point guards in the league, one of the better scorers in the league. But the double-edged sword they're playing with is being a team with title aspirations and a developing team. Because you have these young guys who need to develop and develop, like you said, those crunch time guts. But at the same time, they're trying to win a title. They need their best five out there. So it's a hard discussion to have because on one hand, you want you want Jalen to get the minutes in the end of the game, you know, so he can develop that for the future. But at the same time, a win like this tonight is huge, you know. It propels them not past the Raptors, but it gets them within a half game of first in the East. And it's just another, you know, notch in their belt, like another good team that they beat this season. And they would be 2-0 on the season against Houston, which, again, would be huge as they're arguably the best team in the NBA. So I think, like I said, there's a double-edged sword that the Celtics are playing with. And it's tough, and it's a tough discussion to have. But two players I definitely wanted to touch on, I don't think we've done enough justice talking about them, is Marcus Forrest and Greg Monroe tonight. As you and I both talked about, the Celtics played their own brand of basketball tonight, except for probably the last 6 minutes of the fourth when Ariza and Eric Gordon really started raining threes on them. But for the first 42 minutes of this game, and obviously Monroe and Morris didn't play all 42 minutes, but they showed that they're capable of being more than just, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes off the bench, but they're capable of being actual contributors. Marcus Morris, you know, he's never seen the shot he doesn't like. He'll shoot anything. But when he has games like tonight where he goes 3 for 3 from 3 in the fourth, in the three huge threes, they're not, you know, just putting him ahead or you're chipping into a lead. They're massive threes. And when Greg Monroe is just putting his back to the basket and punishing smaller guys, you know, especially with the way the NBA is going, with everyone trying to play small, a guy like Greg Monroe, if he's on him a certain night, he can punish some of those smaller fours and fives. What do you think about the prospect of, you know, Monroe maybe even sliding into a starting role or, you know, taking some of Baines' minutes? And just Morris as a whole, what are your thoughts on Morris and Monroe?
Look, I think that having Morris off the bench is such a luxury that you don't mess with that momentum, that mojo, whatever the word you want to kind of call it, Taylor, because Morris is kind of like, he reminds me of the Iguodala of the Warriors, where like the Warriors need almost that spark off the bench, and you bring Iguodala, and he just comes in, he does his job well, and he also has supreme confidence. Like, you are not worried about Andre Iguodala getting rattled. The same thing with Marcus Morris. Marcus Morris is tough. He's a veteran in the league. He's a guy that you want on your team. You know he's going to do the dirty work. I mean, tonight he has 3 steals to go along with the 21 points. Taylor, I love the way Marcus Morris comes off the bench. So I wouldn't want to see necessarily Morris starting, because then I think it takes away from – but like if you have Baines off the bench, that doesn't really like give you that much of like an extra kind of pat on the back when you need kind of that jump start to in the middle of a game when it's like, wow, okay, this team's dead. You need something off the bench. Like, Morris gave that to the Celtics tonight. And the same thing with Monroe. I like the fact that Monroe – I mean, here's the thing. It's early in Monroe being with the Celtics. He's what, 8 to 10 games in? I don't know the exact number, but he's not more than 10. And you like the progression you're seeing from Monroe. But I don't want to take this game from Monroe. I mean, look, Monroe could keep going from here and keep giving you 10 to 12 every night. And this could be kind of the jump start of a great – kind of road for Greg Monroe and a great to be a contributor on this team. Or all of a sudden, Tice could keep playing well as well. I mean, there's so many different ways the Celtics team could go with the bench. So, I mean, I love the fact that Monroe is playing really well, and I love how Morris – I think Morris – this is all right. To answer your question, Taylor, I expect Marcus Morris to be a huge part of a potential Celtics deep playoff run, because he's a smart veteran who has an unconscious idea when he's going. When he catches fire, like tonight, just watch out. Like, all you want to do is get him the ball, have him shoot. But with Monroe, who knows? Like, it's so up in the air if it's sustainable that he can come in and do something like this every night. I mean, obviously not 19 points, 18 points from Monroe. But my whole thing is that I know Morris is going to be there at the end of the year playing huge playoff minutes, but told me that Tice, once he heals up, is going to do what Monroe did tonight, but just in a different role, and Monroe's not going to play as much. I wouldn't be as surprised, just because I'm so used to Morris doing this, and Morris is so much further along in the process of being integrated in this team.
I agree, and I think you make two really good points there. And it's probably me just, you know, overreacting to a real good game by a guy that I have a lot of hope for. But Tice is playing extremely well. You know, he's been hurt for the last two games, and that it sucked to not have him on the floor. But he's smaller. He's a little bit slighter of build, so he kind of gets bullied a lot. And Baines, while he's a good defender, I think the grind of an 82-game season is just wearing down on him. The first game back from the All-Star break, he looked okay. You know, he's running a little bit better than he had for the, you know, middle portion of the season. And it's not to say that Monroe is, you know, a speed demon by any means, because he's not. You know, Kevin O'Connor in an article last week said he had cinder blocks for feet. You know, but tonight it looked like Monroe finally was figuring out just what it was like to play in the Celtics offense. And his offensive game, it's not the smoothest thing. It's not the best thing, but, you know, that little spin move he has on the left block and he puts it in, you know, with his left hand. And he 6-for-6 from the line tonight. I wouldn't be surprised if Monroe has a big game down the stretch in the playoffs where it's just him bullying some smaller center and then feeding him like they fed him tonight. That's not to say he's going to be a starter. That's not going to say he's going to, you know, rob any advanced minutes or cut into Tice's playing time, because I don't think either of those two things are going to happen. But tonight showed me something from Monroe that is promising and is the reason they went out and spent $5.4 million of that, you know, player exception that they got for Gordon Hayward. It showed me something. I'm excited for the prospect of Monroe continuing to produce for the Celtics.
Yeah, and you know what? That's a good point as well, Taylor, and the idea that I expect Marcus – that you have – I really expect Marcus Morris, in my opinion, to have a huge role on this team come playoff time, and also have one, maybe two 20-point playoff performance games. Like, I can just tell that's the way Marcus Morris kind of is. That's the way he's been playing all year. He's due to have some big playoff performances come May, maybe potentially even June. With Greg Monroe, I had no idea if he had that in him, because he's obviously 8 to 10 games into his Celtics tenure. But tonight shows you that he maybe has that potential. But at the same time, the bigs are so deep that you wonder, is he going to get the same amount of minutes all the time? Is it going to be as consistent of minutes? So it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out, Taylor.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, something else I wanted to talk to you about is the amount of whistles blown tonight was just asinine. It felt like every single possession, when the Celtics had the ball and the Rockets had the ball, there was a foul call. And that brings me to a point about James Harden. I think James Harden should be the MVP of the league. I'm a James Harden fan. I think he's an incredible player. But do you think the Rockets get favorable whistles? And I don't know the exact breakdown tonight. It felt pretty even tonight. But there are stretches there where, you know, he just, you know, throws his hands up half a foot and they immediately blow the whistle. The foul that Jaylen Brown got called for, which ultimately led to his tech, was ridiculous. So what are your thoughts on Harden as an MVP candidate and just how referees officiate him and just how the referees have performed tonight?
So to answer your first question, I think that unless something crazy changes and Anthony Davis averages 50 points for the rest of the year and the Pelicans climb all the way to the 3 seed, I think there's no chance that James Harden doesn't win MVP, because James Harden very well could have been the MVP last year, but Russell Westbrook had that unprecedented triple-double average and at almost, or I want to say maybe over 30 points a game. But James Harden this year is balling like an MVP. Rockets in the driver's seat in the West. So, yes, to answer the first part of the question, I think James Harden's a clear-cut MVP this year. When you talk about free throws, there was a pretty big discrepancy. 30 free throws were shot by the Rockets, and the Celtics only went to the line 21 times. Look, that's expected in a game that's nationally televised, that's at the home court of the Rockets, and the Rockets are going to get those calls. But I do think that Harden gets calls once in a while because of the way he uses his body. I think that the other night it was interesting to hear some people talk about he crossed up Wesley Johnson, and yes, unbelievable move in the fact that he waited a sec, taunted Wesley Johnson, hit the three. It was something out of a street ball game. But James Harden, if you look at the video, he did kind of push off on Wesley Johnson. So that's one example of many where Harden kind of uses his body and uses these kind of little tricks that he has because he's a great offensive player, where he's going to get calls on times or no calls in that Wesley Johnson situation, where maybe James Harden shouldn't get so many calls. But look, it's like any of these guys in the league. Kyrie, I'm sure if we weren't Celtics analysts and so kind of a little bit biased towards Kyrie, maybe there's times where Kyrie kind of gets away with it the way he uses his body so well. But when you have these guys in the league, Taylor, that are so good at using their bodies like a Harden, and they also are the studs of the league and they're going to get the calls, I'm not shocked that Harden gets to the line tonight 13 times.
Yeah. Just thinking about it, the way the Rockets play is just unbelievable. The Warriors quote-unquote revolutionized basketball. Obviously, the D'Antoni Suns had something to say about that with just, you know, the fast-paced run-and-gun type offense. But the way the Rockets play is just crazy. You know, they shot 49 three-pointers tonight. The Celtics, if felt like they shot a bunch of threes tonight when they only attempted 24. That's half of that almost 50 mark. And then if you're looking at individuals, Eric Gordon shot 11, Harden shot 12, and Trevor Ariza shot 13. That's double-digit three-point attempts for three guys. It's just unbelievable, and when you're putting up that many three-pointers, you know, they got to fall. It's a numbers game. It's D'Antoni's numbers game, the one he made famous in Phoenix, and now he's doing it with, I'll go out and say it, James Harden's better than Steve Nash. Steve Nash, two-time MVP, but if we're picking on the playground, I'm picking James Harden over Steve Nash any day of the week. So, obviously, this isn't Celtics-related, but, Bino, do you think the Rockets have a chance to knock off the Warriors at least this year?
Yeah, look, the way they're built, yes, because of the shooting. You look at the way they shot tonight. I mean, they shot the ball very pretty well from three-point range, 19 for 49. That's good for a little under 39%. But the biggest thing is, Taylor, is their bench. They're deep. It's not just the James Harden seat of the snake. It's the fact that within their starting lineup, you have a guy in Clint Capela who's so young, he's so athletic, and the way he is out there, he's such a compliment to those two facilitators in Harden and Paul. Also, Ariza really plays good D, and he's just a smart player. PJ Tucker, it reminds me a lot of Marcus Smart, just in a lesser degree offensively. And then their bench is so deep. I mean, obviously, Eric Gordon's potentially the sixth man in this league. And then you have Richard Mumba Amute, who is just that consistent 3-and-D guy. And then Nene, I mean, Nene's been around forever, and he's a huge body you throw in there, and he gives you 8 points in 14 minutes. So it's one of those things that they have bodies that can compete with the Sean Livingstons, the Andre Iguodalas, and Patrick McCaw, he's the young guy, and Jordan Bell, those two young guys on the Warriors. Those are the type of guys that the Warriors have that have really made the difference in some of those playoff games for the Warriors, and the Rockets have those guys this year. So look, Taylor, it's all about those guys showing up. And obviously, I think people are questioning the fact that Chris Paul and James Harden don't have the greatest narratives when it comes to playoff time, but they have a chance to change that this year because they look like a very different team than either of those guys have ever been on, because there's a lot of talent around them. Also, every guy plays within that Mike D'Antoni system, Taylor. Every guy can shoot the ball well. I mean, like you said, they had three guys shooting more than 10 three-pointers. And also, Chris Paul only took four, and Chris Paul is as efficient as they come. So to answer your question, Taylor, yes, I think they have a very legitimate shot. But like anything, like just like within the East, you think the Raptors and Celtics look good? It's not until you see LeBron actually go down and it hit triple zeros that you believe it. Same thing with this Warriors team. I mean, they've been in the finals three straight years. They have two of the top five players in the league and arguably three of the top 10 players in the league. So, I mean, I'm not until it's over will I say, oh, my God, it's absolutely going to happen. But is this the best shot of any team I've seen since this Warriors has kind of been a thing for the past 3 to 4 years? Yes, that's I do.
Right. And hearing you say that makes me feel, to bring it back to the what we were talking about earlier, you know, looking at the silver lining, looking at the positives from this game, for you to say that and then me to think about, you know, this Rockets team really could have a chance at knocking off the Warriors. They're, like I've said, you know, multiple times tonight, they're the number one seed in the West. You know, it's a matter of winning percentage and not necessarily the loss column, but they have the best winning percentage in the West. And they have a legitimate shot at knocking off the Warriors, who have proven to be the best team in the NBA for two of the past 3 years or three of the past 4 years. And that makes me feel so much better about this Celtics loss tonight. It sounds weird saying, and it feels weird to say I feel good about a Celtics loss, but 123-120 against arguably the best team in the league isn't anything to hang your head about, especially when Horford has an off night and Kyrie has an off night, which actually brings me to another point. Coming into this game in the last four games, Kyrie is, you know, I think he was averaging 27 points, 6 assists, 6 rebounds on, and he was like shooting something ridiculous, like 50-50-90, so over 50 from the field, over 50% from the field, 50% from three, and then 90% from the line. And, you know, tonight, it's not like he put up a complete, you know, he didn't lay a goose egg. He had, you know, 18-3-6 on 35.3% from the field, 28.6% from three, shot 80% from the line, made a couple free throws that he was trying to miss. You know, in the post game, he said, I suck at intentionally missing them, which probably isn't a bad thing. And he was a minus 17. But, you know, do these types of games from Kyrie make you nervous at all, or do you, you know, chalk it up to it is what it is, let's move on?
No, it's an absolutely, it is what it is, let's move on. I'm so not worried about Kyrie and moving forward when it comes to playoff time and big performances, because it's one of those things too, Taylor. When you have Rozier playing like he played tonight with a 7-for-10 efficiency, and you have Tatum and Brown really playing well at the beginning, don't forget the way the phases of this very specific game went, right? You have Tatum and Brown really starting it off in the first half, looked very, very good. You had in the second half Morris hitting shots. Morris took a ton of shots. He shot almost as many shots as Kyrie. He had 13 to Kyrie 17 shots attempts. You have the way Rozier was shooting. And then Marcus Smart took 12 shots, which obviously is a few too many for both of our likings, but it's very true that Smart took 12 shots. So when you think about how many other guys were shooting a lot tonight, Taylor, it also shows that Kyrie really didn't shoot a ton because he's a smart player and that he lets the other guys get involved. He's not a hog. He's not a diva. And he's like, the only time this Celtics team is going to win is when I want us to win, and I'm going to be the reason we win every single game. No, he realizes that, and maybe that's a huge reason why he wanted to leave playing with LeBron, because he knew that at the end of the day, you need a team. It's not just one guy. So I think that Kyrie showed maturity, in my opinion, making these other guys get involved and having these other guys getting involved and kind of taking a step back tonight, being like, I'm a little bit off. These guys are on. Go ahead. And guess what? They almost won, Taylor. So to me, that shows maturity and also shows that Kyrie, when it comes to crunch time, he still played relatively well. I mean, he got to the basket and hit a layup that he hit 9.5 times out of 10. And he at the very end, we needed a layup. He went all the way down. He gives you that layup. I mean, he made the plays at the end that you still needed from him. So, no, I'm not worried about Kyrie at all. He's the least of my worries.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm glad you feel that way, because I feel that way too. Obviously, I may have posed the question, you know, in a way that feels like I felt negatively. I didn't. You know, just yesterday, I posted a blog saying Kyrie Irving is playing his best basketball, and I genuinely feel that way. I think this is probably not peak Kyrie. I don't think we've ever seen peak Kyrie, and obviously he hasn't hit the heights, the highest of highs that he hit in Cleveland. But the way Kyrie's been playing for Boston lately is just exactly the player that Danny Ainge traded for. You know, he's the reason that we moved Isaiah Thomas, who is beloved in Boston, even more beloved than, I'd argue, more beloved than Paul Pierce during their playing careers. Not anymore, because since Paul Pierce has retired and since he, you know, came back and hit, you know, had his last game on the Garden for with L.A. last year, and then he's had his number retired. He's more beloved now, but it wasn't any small decision to move Isaiah for Kyrie, but the reason you do that and you move the Brooklyn pick and everything is because you get this type of player back, this guy who can go out there and get you 30, but is also the key to an offense that is is the offense for the number two team in the Eastern Conference. And, you know, like you said, tonight's just I proposed, it's just that, you know, it is what it is, move on. Kyrie is going to be fine in 3-point losses and anything to hang your head about, like I said.
Yeah, and with that, Taylor, I mean, if you told me the Celtics were going to win 4 in a row and then go into Houston, have an unbelievable almost finals-like matchup where they went back and forth, it was a great game, and they played to their own tempo and didn't succumb to the kind of almost peer pressure of the Rockets 3-and-D type of play in the Mike D'Antoni system, and they would only give up 123 to the Rockets on the road, I would say that's excellent, and that means that the Celtics are getting back on track. And I think they are getting back on track, Taylor. And you look at their schedule coming up, it's not anything too crazy. I mean, they go at Chicago on Monday in a game that most people think that the Celtics obviously should win. Chicago's one of the weaker teams in the East. And then they go at Minnesota on a Thursday night, so it's a little bit of a road trip, but then they come back for two games on a Sunday against the Pacers and then against the Wizards on Wednesday, March 14th. So they have a kind of couple games coming up that are important when to the Eastern Conference and just getting confidence, because the Pacers are a very good team and they're a sneaky good team led by Victor Oladipo, and obviously the Wizards are not liked by the Celtics at all, and that's a team that the Celtics are definitely going to want to go after. So, Taylor, out of those games, what do you think is the most important symbol-wise moving forward? Because obviously the Celtics want to win as many as they can. They need to win as many as they can to try to catch Toronto. But out of these next four and the next 10 days, what do you think is the most important out of the Chicago, Minnesota, Indiana, and Washington game?
I think if you look at Chicago, they're tanking as hard as they can right now. They're actually letting campaign step on a basketball floor. So I think the Celtics should win that game. Minnesota is without Jimmy Butler, and they won their two games, and then they've lost a couple cents. I think that would be a big win, but a loss doesn't kill you because it's a Western Conference team. I think the Pacers and Wizards games are obviously much more important. Oladipo went off for 35 or 36 last time he played against the Celtics. And I think it'll be – I'm not calling it the most important game because I think the most important game is the Wizards game. But looking at that Indiana game, like I just said, Oladipo went off against the Celtics last time, but they didn't have Marcus Smart. I tweeted it out. I don't think Oladipo would have gone off if Smart's on the floor. Maybe he still gets his, and because, you know, he's an all-star, he's going to get his. But Smart would have had something to say about that. So I think it'll be interesting to see the Celtics play the Pacers again, this time at full strength. But at the end of the day, that rivalry between the Wizards and Celtics is one of my favorite things in basketball. And at the end of that four games in 10 days, playing Washington, even though they're not going to have John Waller, it's always interesting when they play against Washington. You know, Beal's going off, and everybody eats. Well, the Celtics want to eat, too. They're 1-1 against Washington this season. They played them in the playoffs last year. There's bad blood there. Everyone wears black for the funeral, so I'm always going to choose Washington. It's the most important and most interesting game out of any stretch.
See, that's funny to me, Taylor. Indiana is that team right now that kind of scares me and could be that team that could upset the Celtics in a potential second-round matchup, because Indiana right now, I want to say they're in the four seed. I'm gonna double-check that. But the thing about Indiana is, like you said, they came into the Garden a few weeks back and won 97-91, and Oladipo went off. And, yeah, right now Indiana is the five seed. So if you think about it, the Celtics would potentially play the Pacers at some point if that's the way everything went. Actually, no, they would play. Yeah, I mean, look, the way the seedings are going to go, it's all going to get mixed up going forward. But the Pacers could eventually play the Celtics in the playoffs because the Celtics are obviously towards the top. Indiana's kind of in the middle, so that a second-round matchup could potentially be in the future. But look, my point on Indiana is this, Taylor, is that they're the type of team that they're a JV version of the Celtics in that they have lesser people. But they're so gritty, and they're led by Oladipo, who has such a fire under him because he feels like he was so disrespected after that Paul George trade. And they've already come into Boston and proved that they can win and they can beat the Celtics team. And they almost beat the Celtics even earlier on. They needed a Terry Rozier crazy steal and layup at the very end to win that game for the Celtics in Indiana. So this Indiana team is legit, and it's one of those things that, yeah, everybody talks about Toronto and LeBron, not even the Cavs. People just talk about LeBron. I think it's very important to beat a team like the Pacers, who very well could end up playing the Celtics at some point in the playoffs.
I agree. And that Oladipo game a couple weeks ago really hurt. Just watching that, I think it was a Thursday or Friday night, and just watching him put dagger after dagger after dagger in the Celtics really killed me. And obviously, it's just me coming from a fan's perspective with the Washington thing. I was at the game last year when Jay Crowder booped John Wall in the nose. I watched that whole playoff series. There's just bad blood there, and that's something I love. I'm a football guy, so it's, you know, bad blood is just one of my favorite things. But you know, if we're looking to the future with the schedule, I think we should look to the future, or not. We should, but we have to look towards the future with Gordon Hayward. And this morning, Brad Stevens finally came out and said he's not playing this year. After the months and months of saying we don't expect him to play this year, the videos of Hayward, you know, shooting from a chair and then shooting from a standstill, and the video that came out yesterday of him kind of stand still, dribbling and jumping a little bit, and everyone getting excited. Celtics fans and Celtics media alike were going off on Twitter about, oh, Hayward's going to come back and play 15 minutes in the playoffs. Hayward, Hayward, Hayward. This morning, Brad Stevens said no. He's not going to play. You know, he's not healthy. He's a long ways away from playing. He's not going to play this season. And honestly, it was really nice to hear that. Obviously, I wanted Hayward back, but I didn't want him back if he's not 100%. For Brad to come out and say he's not 100%, he won't be 100% for a long time, he's not coming back, finally put up that solid, solid barrier that, hey, this guy's not playing. This is the team we have going forward. We're going to rock with this team. We'll have Hayward back next year, but come on, stop asking me about it. He's not coming back.
Well, you know what? This is the thing, Taylor, too. I never wanted Hayward to come back because I think it would be so awkward that the first time Hayward plays meaningful minutes in a Celtics jersey could be in the playoffs when he's coming off the bench. And it would just be so, like, weird for his psyche, I think, because I want Hayward to come back and be the clear number two on the Celtics team. I want him to come back and be like, I am Robin to Kyrie Irving, who's Batman. We are going to take over the Eastern Conference for years to come, and I am going to come back full form. I didn't want Gordon Hayward to come back and be some awkward, like, 10-15-minute guy off the bench who's a symbol, and Brad Stevens is, like, nervous every time he, like, so, I mean, I'm kind of relieved personally. I know other people that are crazy Celtics homers are so sad, and they still are going to hold out hope even when Brad Stevens, the coach who coached Gordon Hayward in college and probably has the best relationship with anybody besides Hayward's wife. I mean, there's no way that Hayward comes back this year, in my opinion, and Stevens said that today, and I'm just relieved personally because I think it takes away any potential awkwardness within the team, because the media would be constantly asking about it. So I think it's a good thing for the Celtics team, and they can kind of just focus on themselves and continue this kind of pseudo house money year where they're so good and they're right around that first seed in the East. But at the same time, you know that you're not even at full strength, and I think that's going to give them a lot of confidence moving forward. That okay. This is what we got, and guess what? Even if it doesn't work out this year, we know we have a legitimate all-star coming back. So,
yeah, I think that's a good point, and I generally agree with you. Like I said, I think it would have been cool to see Hayward out on the floor this year, but that's it. It would have been cool. I don't think it would have been helpful. I don't think it would have been beneficial for Heat or the Celtics because no matter what, even if he's clear, he's 100%, quote-unquote 100%, the guy snapped his leg in half in October. You know, he's not going to come back and be the Gordon Hayward we expect him to, and I don't want it to be a zoo animal type situation where he's just out there because, you know, fans want to be out there. I want him out there because he's 100% he can actually contribute to this team. So, you know, that's what it is. Would he have helped in a game tonight? Obviously, but he's not ready. He's not going to be ready this season, and it's time to just put that to bed because every time I log on to Twitter and I see a video of him or a picture of him, it's just, oh, man, 323 he and Kyrie put on Instagram. They have the same birthday. Could it have meant something at the time? Did they think maybe he's going to come back? Maybe. But at this point, Brad said he's not coming back. He's not coming back. And that's it.
Yeah, and also 323 is at Portland. I don't know what that could mean other than it's just at Portland. I mean, what's so cool about going to play Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum? I mean, yeah, they're good players, but
yeah.
It's not like they're circling that for some specific reason. I mean, and I'm obviously joking, Taylor, but it's one of those things that Kyrie, I think Kyrie almost likes to just play with everybody. Who knows if Kyrie actually thinks the world is flat? Who knows what Kyrie really thinks? I think Kyrie likes just messing with the media because he knows how much power and sway he has. And when he says something that's kind of funny and something so out of this world and irrational that people take it so literally. So I think that Kyrie just likes to be Mr. like, oh, I'm in the Illuminati, even though the Illuminati's not real. And that I like that about Kyrie because he doesn't try to take anything too seriously but being a hooper. And guess what? He didn't fulfill his potential tonight, but guess what? This is going to be one of those games that we hopefully Celtics fans look back on and think, okay, guess what? They lost by three to a very good team who could potentially represent the West and the East. He didn't play that well, and guess what? 323, whatever that all means, I think Hayward's back next year, and I think the Celtics team is going to be even better next year.
Right, and 323, it's Kyrie's birthday, and Gordon Hayward has the same birthday. That's what the numbers are, but that's it. And at this point, when you and I are talking about Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward's birthday at 12:20 a.m. on a Saturday night / Sunday morning, I think that means it's a good time to end the show. So, like you said, 123 Rockets, 120 Celtics, tough loss down in Houston, but there's a lot of good to come from it, a lot of development to come from it. For me, I'm Taylor McLeod. For my co-host, Andrew Rubino, this is the CLNS Celtics postgame show. Thanks for the callers. Make sure you go out, download the SeatGeek app, use the promo code Garden Report to get $20 off. Go get your RX bars and have a good night.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNSradio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcast on the web.